Hey there, thanks for listening to All Latino. We want to ask you to check out the NPR One app for your phone. All this month, you can hear episodes of our pals at Pop Culture Happy Hour a day early, exclusively in NPR One. Find Pop Culture Happy Hour, stories from your local stations, and more great podcasts on NPR One. It's in your app store now. Check it out. From NPR Music, this is Alt Latino. I'm Felix Contreras. Jasmine Garst is away. This week, there is a new album from Santana called Santana 4. It's a reunion of most of the members of the band that recorded the first three Santana albums from 1969 through 1971. That band and those albums were not only extremely popular, selling millions of records, but they also pioneered the combination of Afro-Caribbean rhythms and instruments with rock, introducing Latin music to mainstream audiences and changing popular music in the process. This week, I invited Carlos Santana and the original Santana drummer Michael Shreve for a musical DNA session of their early music. So put on your lab coat and grab your earbuds. We're going to go to a molecular level to understand the seemingly magical process of transformation and creation in which the band combined unrelated styles and genres to create a sound that is still popular 50 years later. Part of the genesis of their musical alchemy was the fact that the band all lived in the same house before they made their first record, a kind of hippie musical boarding school. Here's Michael Shreve and then Carlos Santana explaining what that was like.
I remember when I moved in with the guys in the band, it was really fascinating to me because everybody had their own records. Music was going all the time, but everybody was sharing.
Well, everybody was bringing their own love affair, what they like, you know. Michael Shreve was bringing Coltrane and Miles and Elvin Jones, and Carabello and Chapito were bringing, you know, Tito Puente, Eddie Palmieri, you know, Ray Barreto. For me, it was just basically blues. I basically was listening to John Lee Hooker and Lightning Hopkins and Jimmy Reed.
For Carlos, an idea began to take shape.
I was getting more and more fascinated with how to cross-pollinate B.B. King with Tito Puente.
And then there was always this.
And we also noticed that this music drove women absolutely crazy.
The first Santana album was released in 1969. Their second was called Abraxas and came out the next year. Then Santana 3 in 1971. Now what we're going to do is deconstruct two songs from Abraxas. First, Black Magic Woman, which has been on the Santana set list almost consistently for over 45 years.
Got a black magic woman. Got a black magic woman. I've got a black magic woman. Got me so blind I can't see. That she's a black magic woman. She's trying to make a devil out of me.
But it's actually a cover of a Fleetwood Mac song from 1968, written by British guitarist Peter Green.
I got a black magic woman. I got a black magic woman. Yes, I got a black magic woman. Got me so blind I can't see. That she's a black magic woman and she's trying to make a devil out of me.
The transformation of Black Magic Woman into a Santana signature song was again a result of groupthink.
The first time we tried it, it was Greg Raleigh who, we were in a parking lot in Fresno, and he said, hey man, I got this song, I want to try out. We're like, okay. And as soon as we started playing it, you know, back then is now, I just rely on a portfolio Rolodex in my brain of okay, I'm going to put some Wes Montgomery in here, and then I'm going to put some Otis Rush over there. And, you know, and I just think like that.
And here is where inspired innovation comes into play. Michael Shreve had to come up with a drum part to fit under those blues references, as well as the Cuban rhythms being played on the congas and timbales.
When I was a kid, I used to ride my bicycle down to a store called Thrifty Drugstore, and I'd take my paper route money and buy, look through the record bins and look at the 59-cent records. And there was John Lee, a lot of blues, John Lee Hooker, and I found a B.B. King record called B.B. King Plays the Cha-Cha. It even had the dance steps on the back of the record. Well, I took that record home, and I learned this rhythm. I never got a chance to play that rhythm in any group I was in until we started working on Black Magic Woman. And so the rhythm, which is in a lot of blues songs, by the way, I finally got to use it when we played Black Magic Woman.
Are you talking about the intro with the keyboard part, or during like
the vocal? During the vocal part.
Okay, I'm going to bring the music up a little bit. Can you vocalize the drum part you were playing?
And there you have it.
The Abraxas album cover lists this track as Black Magic Woman and Gypsy Queen, which is the best jam at the end of the song. That too is a cover. It's from an album called Spellbinder by a Hungarian jazz guitarist named Gabor Szabo.
I remember when I moved in with the guys in the band, music was going all the time, but everybody was sharing. And I remember this Spellbinder record by Gabor Szabo being played a lot in the house.
This is the album that I believe took me out of B.B. King, because B.B. King, he had me all right, you know. Everybody wanted to be B.B. King at one time, you know, and then they wanted to be Eric Clapton or Jimi Hendrix. I was looking for a new way to bring something to the table that was different than B.B.
Gabor Szabo was a Hungarian jazz
player. Gabor Szabo and Bolasete.
Gabor Szabo was a Hungarian jazz player.
Yeah.
Bolasete is from Brazil.
Yeah, and both of those guitar players brought a whole new spectrum, frequency, dimension in thinking and approaching the guitar that it was extremely different than Jimi Hendrix. You know, most people saw Jimi Hendrix and they wanted to quit, you know, and rightly so, because they were afraid. I wasn't afraid. I just said, well, I have to find something that he don't know.
Right.
And Gabor Szabo was it.
You know, as a musician myself, I can really relate to these stories of how this all came together. It really is a magical moment when a bunch of musical ideas come together in something so powerful, and in this case, so long-lasting. Here's Black Magic Woman, Gypsy Queen, uninterrupted. Thank you.
magic woman. Got a black magic woman. I've got a black magic woman. Got me so blind I can't see. That she's a black magic woman. She's trying to make a devil out of me. Don't turn your back on me, baby.
This album, Abraxas, certainly qualifies as a classic rock masterpiece. It has songs that have become iconic, it sold millions of copies and continues to sell, and it's still popular with the vinyl collectors. But what most people don't realize is that just about every track is cleverly based on Afro-Caribbean rhythms. For example, the first track on side two is called Se Acabó, and it is based on a rhythm called merengue from the Dominican Republic. Here's what the tradition sounds like. And here's what they did with that. There is also a bit of Cuban folkloric huahuanco on the album. There's a romantic bolero, there's a mambo, and they also covered a Tito Puente big band arrangement. In Santana's hands, it soon became the world's most famous Cuban cha-cha-cha. Michael Shreve's role as the drummer was key in musically aligning the Afro-Cuban clave beat with rock and jazz. Now, he says the rhythms they played were not completely authentic by design, and he came up with a less-is-more approach to meld everything together, very much like a jazz drummer would.
I just tried to stay out of the way, to tell you the truth, with all the rhythm that was going on. Rather than try to be something I wasn't, really, I tried to be supportive and stay out of the way and make the rhythm more like a tapestry than trying to stand out at all.
Hey there, we're going to take a quick break from Santana's music and remind you to check out the newest NPR podcast, Embedded. Each week, Embedded takes you to a new place out in the world, searching for the people behind a headline. This week, host Kelly McEvers gets embedded with biker gangs in Texas after a deadly shootout. She tries to figure out how it happened and who to trust. Listen and subscribe to Embedded now at npr.org/podcast and on the NPR One app. Now, back to Santana. Okay, the next song we dissect is Incident at Neshaber, which closes out side one of Abraxas. Are you digging all those vinyl references? It commemorates a battle by an 18th century Haitian former slave turned general who helped Haiti become free of the French and slavery. So it starts with the frenetic energy of battle. Then settles into a driving 6/8 time signature. The 6/8 beat references traditional Afro-Cuban Santeria rhythms, but the inspiration for the song came from a well-known jazz tune by pianist Horace Silver.
Señor Blues.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do- Okay, once again, Michael Shreve had to interpret it on the drum set to pull all the pieces together and make it swing.
The 6-8 is played on the cymbal, well, in part of it's on the hi-hat and snare, but then the cymbal, which is a fast, straight 16th note sort of feeling, which is almost like a Brazilian feeling, like a fast bossa nova or a samba on the cymbal. So it was kind of a different way to play the 6-8.
And then the song changes. It slows down, and for both Carlos Santana and Michael Shreve, this part of the song is both a musical and emotional statement.
There's a certain sound that reminds people of their own divinity. That's the sound right there. You know, the other one is war. You know, it's Coltrane and everything, and you know, you're trying to clean the house and move things, and but when you go da 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 boom, when you go there, man, life is a blessing and a miracle.
As a drummer, I'm a huge fan of both rhythm and melody, especially when it's played by somebody like Carlos. So I've always loved the second half of this song where it slows down and Carlos plays the melodies. It's always been a very special song to me.
I remember Miles distinctively saying, "That's my favorite song." And I was like, oh.
Now let's hear the whole song. This is Incident at Neshebar.
We'll be right back.
For a musician, breaking new musical ground like that is the kind of thing that never leaves you. The new album Santana 4 was made in the spirit of that music, and it has the same DNA as the music they made back then. Guitarist Neil Sean and keyboard player Greg Raleigh, who both left Santana to form Journey way back when, as well as percussion mates Michael Carabello and Michael Shreve, collaborated once again with Carlos Santana on new songs, and they're performing a handful of shows. Those, of course, are the physical manifestations of getting back together, but it is Santana. And as before, there is a higher calling of the reunion in the music.
This band, Santana, is not an entertainment solely band. This Santana band, from the beginning, it was about altering consciousness, like Coltrane. Right, Michael?
That's right.
And that's how we get that sound. All of a sudden, Michael's drums, they sound differently because he's invested emotionally into a belief. Now we are at that place where we're second to nobody. And to me, that's what when my eyes and my heart open up to, like, wow, this is different sound than just congas and timbales and amplifiers. My soul is imprinted in these songs, and the tenacity and the conviction of my soul, that's a different sound.
You know, what's important to remember about those first years is something that goes beyond the music, the album sales, and not to mention the late 70s fashion statements. The evolution of Santana from a bunch of young, very talented individuals into a band was equal parts musical and spiritual.
I'm very excited to see what the reaction is with the record. And I know you can't please everybody, especially some hardcore fans of the early group, but we feel like we really captured something without it sounding old or trying to recreate something from the past, but something fresh, very fresh, and very energetic. That's why Carlos wanted to call it Santana 4. It's just as if we just left off right where we were.
The energy seems like it's even more intense because we don't spend any time fighting. We invest the time in giving each other total adoration. You know, I adore Michael, you know, Shreve, Michael Carabello, and Greg and Neil. I adore them because when I close my eyes, even when I'm not playing, I'm playing. We have entered into a place of validation, appreciation, and adoration. It's okay to adore each other for what we bring out of each other and what we bring to each other.
My thanks to Carlos Santana for once again joining me here in the studio at Out Latino, and to Michael Shreve, who joined us from NPR member station KUOW in Seattle, Washington. You can hear all of the tracks we play today on our website at npr.org/altlatino. And please don't forget to reach out to us on Facebook and Twitter. We are NPR's Alt Latino. Jasmine Garst will be back next week. I'm Felix Contreras. This has been Alt Latino.